Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 13, Text Number 23. The chapter is titled The Hamsavata Answers Questions. Panchatmakeshu Bhuteshu,
Panchatmakeshu Bhuteshu,
Panchatmakeshu Bhuteshu,
Panchatmakeshu Bhuteshu,
Samaneshu cha Vatsutah. Samaneshu cha vatsutah ko bhavani diva prashno ko bhavani diva prashno vacharambo hi anarthakah vacharambo hi anarthakah Panchatmakeshu Bhuteshu Samaneshu cha Vatsutah Ko Bhavani Diva Prashno Vacharambho hi Anarthakah Panchatmakeshu Bhuteshu Samaneshu cha Vatsutah ko bhavani diva prashno vacharambho hi anarthakah pancha of five elements atmakeshu made of bhuteshu thus existing samaneshu being the same cha or so Vatsutah, in essence. Ka, who, Bhavan, are you, iti, thus, va, your, prashnah, question, vacha, merely with words, arambha, such an endeavor, he, certainly, anarthakah, without real meaning or purpose. Translation. If by asking me, who are you, you were referring to the material body, then I must point out that all material bodies are constituted of five elements, namely earth, water, fire, air and ether. Thus, you should have asked, who are you five? If you consider that all material bodies are ultimately one, being constituted essentially of the same elements, then your question is still meaningless, since there will be no deep purpose in distinguishing one body from another. Thus, it appears that in asking my identity, you are merely speaking words without any real meaning or purpose. So it's a purport by servants of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains this verse as follows. In the previous verse, Lord Krishna demonstrated that if the sages accepted the impersonal philosophy that all living beings are ultimately one in all respects, their question, who are you, was meaningless, since there would be no philosophical basis to distinguish one manifestation of spirit soul from another. In this verse, the Lord refutes the false identification with the material body composed of five elements. If the sages accepted the body as the self, then their question was meaningless, since they would have to ask, who are you five? If the sages replied that although the body is composed basically of five elements, and these elements combine and thus form one unique substance, then the Lord has already replied by the words Samaneshu cha Vasudha. The body of human beings, demigods, animals, etc. are all composed of the same five elements and are essentially the same. Therefore the question, who are you, is ultimately meaningless. Thus if one accepts either the theory that all living entities are ultimately the same or the theory that all living entities are ultimately non-different from their material bodies, in both cases, the question of the sages is meaningless. The sages might argue that even among learned persons it is common practice to ask questions and give answers on many subjects as part of normal life. Thus, sages could point out that Lord Krishna also distinguished among them by his saying Vipra, O Brahmanas, or Va, or your question. As expressed in this verse, in this way it is seen that the Lord also accepts the ordinary custom of questions and answers. To answer this argument, Lord Krishna states, Vacharambohi anarthakaha. The Lord states, by my addressing you as Brahmana is merely an exhibition of words if we were ultimately not different. I merely reciprocated with your approach to me. Therefore, if we are ultimately one, neither my statement nor your question has any real meaning. I can conclude, therefore, by your question to me that you are all not actually very intelligent. Therefore, why are you inquiring after ultimate knowledge? Aren't you all embarrassed? Srila Madhvacharya points out in this regard that the question of the sages was not appropriate since they had already seen their father, Lord Brahma, worshipping the lotus feet of Lord Hamsa. Since their spiritual master and father was worshipping Lord Hamsa, they should have immediately understood the Lord's position, and their question is thus meaningless. Om Ajnana Timrantasya Jnananjana Shalakya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. This verse is very significant because it is covering very important philosophy, and this verse as such is very philosophical. So in this section, two main arguments of the normal people, of the worldly people, are refuted. One is impersonalism and the second is bodily identification, or considering the self to be the matter. So if you analyze what is meant by materialist people, we call many people materialist. But if you say what is meant by materialist people, the word materialist means one who identifies, one who says there is nothing more than matter. So the identity and the ultimate aim is composed of matter. So in Vedas, matter is described in two different terms. One, it is known as dvitiya or secondary. So as it is said in 11th canto, Bhayam Dvitiya Abhinivesheta Syad. That is, the matter as such is secondary because the primary substance is spiritual substance. So whatever is secondary, which is not so important, that is considered matter. However, in the Vishnu Puran, matter is also addressed as Tritiya Shakti. Tritiya means tertiary or the third class. Prabhu was translated as third class. So it is a third class potency of the Lord. It's not the first class, it's not the second class, it is the lowest grade. So matter has these two terminologies apart from, you know, other the normal terms for the matter. So in all these aspects, matter is not considered so important compared to the spirit. And here Hamsa is present in front of the Lord Brahma and the Kumaras. And the Kumaras are posing this question. That is the normal question. If someone comes and if you do not know who is, you will just normally ask, who are you? So similarly, they asked, who are you? And immediately the Lord refuted their question. And just by refuting their question, the Lord is giving transcendental knowledge. And the first point the Lord is making, if you are asking who are you, there can be two possibilities. In the previous verse, it was confirmed that, okay, if somebody accept one spirit soul to be the same as other, that is, ultimately there is one spiritual entity existing, then this question as such is meaningless. Because if you are considering the impersonal philosophy that everything is one, okay, ultimately there is the spirit and there are spirit everywhere and ultimately everything is one. If one accept that theory, then this question is completely meaningless, because it doesn't make any sense to ask, who are you? Then the Lord continues, he says, no, if you accept that you are just matter, this body and the self are the same and it is just composed of matter, if you accept this point, still this question is completely meaningless. The reason is, then you should have asked, who are you? Five. Because it is Bhumirapo Analovayu Gham. So the five material elements. So as Bhagavad Gita says, these five material elements are the basis of matter, the gross matter at least. So in that case, this question again remains meaningless. Then it comes to the third level. That is, suppose if you consider, okay, there are no variegated five material elements. There is no earth, water, fire either. These five elements are not present. And ultimately it is amalgamated to one. Even if you accept that fact, if one accepts that theory, still the question is meaningless. The reason being, if everything is one, in the material sense, that everything is matter, I am matter, you are matter, whatever we are seeing, everything is matter, and if everything is ultimately made of one element, then what is the whole point, what is the depth in the question asking, who are you? So this is the three levels in which Hamsa refutes the question of the sages. Then here, it's very interesting, because the Hamsa also makes a point in the, as it is written in the commentary, if everything is one in the material sense or the spiritual sense, what is the big deal asking a question to the Supreme Lord? If we do not accept the position of the Supreme Lord, if we don't distinguish his position, then what is the purpose of asking such a question? Srila Prabhupada makes this point very clearly in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita as it is. Prabhupada makes why Bhagavad Gita is important. Bhagavad Gita is important because we accept the supreme position of Lord Krishna. If we do not accept the position of Lord Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead, then Bhagavad Gita in itself loses all its significance. There is no point listening to Bhagavad Gita if Krishna is not the supreme Lord. So Prabhupada makes this point very clearly. Because especially arguing against the Mayavas philosophy, when they say everything is one, then what is the significance of quoting from Bhagavad Gita? What is the significance of writing commentaries on Bhagavad Gita? What is the purpose of interpreting Bhagavad Gita? Because ultimately it is not coming from the Supreme Lord. Ultimately it is coming from somebody, someone like you. So there can be mistakes. And everyone is bound to mistakes. So what is the whole point of reading this Bhagavad Gita? So Prabhupada, at the first, he cuts this point and he establishes Krishna is the Supreme Lord, so we are studying Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise Bhagavad Gita doesn't have any value or purpose. In the same way, we can see Hamsavatar also makes the same point. That is, if we want to listen from me, then you should understand the distinguished position of the Supreme Lord. Because Krishna has come here as the Hamsa, as the Swan. Then, since he primarily refutes the two arguments, that is, we are not the matter and we are not ultimately one with the Supreme or any others, we are individuals. So this is the point actually Srila Prabhupada conveyed. If you see Srila Prabhupada's Pranam Mantra, it is Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine. Because Prabhupada came to the Western world and all around the world to refute these two things. One is Nirvishesh and Shunyavad. That is impersonalism and voidism. So Prabhupada's teachings, if you see, Prabhupada stresses so much on impersonalism. He refutes impersonalism again and again. Same with materialism. And I was thinking and reading the actual source of these instructions. When Prabhupada gives so much powerful arguments, Prabhupada gives so many verses quoting to refute this Mayavad philosophy. And what is the source of these arguments? Where this philosophy is ultimately coming from? When we check this, we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are so many incidents in which Mahaprabhu refutes this argument. He gives such a profound explanation, profound contradictions to Mayavad philosophy. It's very interesting. In different conversations of Mahaprabhu, we can see this. One such conversation I was thinking to describe is the conversation of Mahaprabhu and శ్రీ ప్రకాశానంద సరస్వతి. Mahaprabhu was going to Mathura and Vrindavan, and on his way he was in Benaras. So when he was passing through Benaras, he was criticized by many Mayavad sannyasis. They were criticizing him as a sentimentalist who was simply chanting and dancing without studying Vedanta philosophy. Mahaprabhu heard this, but he just smiled. He didn't really care about it, and he went to Mathura and Vrindavan. But while coming back, he stopped in Benaras on the way to Jagannath Puri. So in Benaras, Mahaprabhu was staying with his dear devotee Chandrasekhar Acharya, and he used to take prasadam from Tapan Mishra. So these two were very confidential devotees of Mahaprabhu, and they had a great desire in their heart. They were thinking, how these people, these great Mayavadi sannyasis, they are criticizing Mahaprabhu for his pure devotional service, chanting and dancing, always in ecstasy. How can they criticize such a great devotee and the Supreme Lord himself? And they wanted to show some compassion to this Mayavadi philosophers. So when one day they were thinking like that, and Mahaprabhu was in the house of Chandrasekhar Acharya, one Brahmin came and he invited Mahaprabhu. He said to Mahaprabhu, I know that you are not at all interested in associating with any of the sannyasis from the other sampradayas. However, I am requesting you to come to my house to honor samprasadam. And Brahmana said, I have invited so many sannyasis. All the main sannyasis from Benaras, they are all in my house. And please, Mahaprabhu, join them. So Mahaprabhu, he accepted the invitation of this Brahmana to show his mercy to different Mayavad sannyasis. And among these Mayavad sannyasis, the prominent was Prakashananda Saraswati. He was the leader of all Mayavad sannyasis in Benaras. So when Mahaprabhu reached the house of this Brahmin, he saw all the sannyasis, including Prakashananda Saraswati, sitting on a higher plane. They are sitting on a higher Vyasasana seat. And once he reached there, Mahaprabhu paid humble respects, according to the custom, to all the great sannyasis. Then he washed his legs and he sat near the food basin. And if you think, he actually accepted a very humble position. Because these sannyasis, even though they were Mayavadis, they were in a higher plane, they were sitting on a higher plane, and Mahaprabhu was on such a lower position near the food basin. And Mahaprabhu just sat there, and these sannyasis, they had a look at Mahaprabhu. At that time, they could see some effulgence emanating from the Supreme Lord. As they are Mayavadis. Mayavadis are always attracted to light or the effulgence, because their primary attraction is Brahma Jyoti, the light emanating from the Supreme Lord. So when they saw the effulgence coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahaprabhu, even though they couldn't understand or accept the Lord is a Supreme Person, still they were attracted to the Jyoti, to the light. Then all had a look and they asked Mahaprabhu, why are you sitting there? Why are you sitting in such a lower position? Why can't you come and join us? And saying this, actually Prakashananda Saraswati went down and extended his hand and took him to the same position as other sannyasis. So before that, Mahaprabhu answered, why are you sitting there? He said, I am from a lower grade of sannyas order, so I am not really qualified to sit like you on a higher plane. I am better sit down. Then when Prakashananda Saraswati did this service, Mahaprabhu accepted. In this dealing of Mahaprabhu with Prakashananda Saraswati, we can learn one thing. One is how Mahaprabhu accepted a humble position for the purpose of preaching Mayavadis. And second is for Prakashananda Saraswati to have some change in his heart, he had to perform some devotional service. And that devotion service was very simple. He actually extended his hand and took Mahaprabhu from a lower plane to a higher plane. That's all he did. But afterwards, we can see how the heart of Prakashananda Saraswati as well as other sannyasis changed simply by the mercy of the Lord and the endeavor from the part of Prakashananda Saraswati. That is just doing a simple devotion service, how the whole scene, the whole philosophy, everything, how everything changed. So I was thinking about this point, that is, when we are preaching, how we have to take a humble position, or when we use words, or when we perform some action, we have to be humble. Otherwise, it may not work, or it will not work actually. It is said, when we see Srila Prabhupada's lectures, Prabhupada uses heavy words. Prabhupada says, fools, rascals, on the face. And Prabhupada said, okay, the reason I can say all these things is because I am an old man. So I can say anything and I can get away. But actually that's not the reason. Even though Prabhupada is saying out of his humility that I am speaking these words and I can get away, but that's not the actual reason. The actual reason is purity of Prabhupada. Prabhupada is such a qualified person, he doesn't lose his humility. Even though he is using heavy words, even though he is smashing, still Prabhupada is very humble. Within his heart, he is very humble. His position in connection to his spiritual master, his connection in connection to Supreme Lord, that is not deviated at all. Whenever Prabhupada is smashing anyone. But when we try to imitate, when we simply try to smash someone for the sake of smashing, you know, somebody said something, okay, I want to smash him. I want to use all my philosophy, all my energy to smash him. If we try to do that, actually it can backfire. The reason is, Lord is actually compassionate. So why should Lord show compassion to him rather than to you? He will show compassion to you if we try to smash someone in that way without humility. By the Lord will smash us. So that actually when we are trying to smash someone, actually we get smashed. And there won't be any change in the heart of somebody whom we are trying to preach. Because our position, we are accepting a position of a pride and we are trying to lording it over. We are thinking, I am the master and he's in front of me as a servant. You know, especially if we are preaching to new people. We think, okay, we know everything and he is a fool sitting in front of me. And I am the master and he is a servant. So I am showing my prowess by giving all this philosophy. If that is our approach, our preaching will never be efficient. It will not be effective. And it can be a little simple if we are preaching to senior devotees. Because if we are talking in front of senior devotees, then we know they are senior devotees and we are juniors. So we cannot take a proud position. But when we are speaking to even new people or even of equals, there can be this problem that we become proud. And we can try to smash, we can try to just display our skills or knowledge or whatever. So that will backfire us. In this regard, there is one example given by Prabodhananda Saraswati. Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur, who was a great devotee of Mahaprabhu from Srirangam, and he later life he lived in Vrindavan, he actually gave a preaching technique. So I was hearing one of the lectures of Prabhupada from Bhagavad Gita. So he said, Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur, he says, how to preach? But to be honest, I have never tried this preaching technique because it is quite heavy technique. So Prabodhananda Saraswati, he says, Dante nidhaya trinakam patayo nipatya kakushakam chakritva yadaham bravimi. He says, if we want to preach to someone, first take a blade of grass, that is Dante nidhaya, and place in between your teeth. And he says, then patayo nipatya, then fall straight at his feet. Okay. And kakushakam chakritva, that is then glorify him, flatter him. And how to flatter him? He says, you can flatter him. He says, hey sadhava. You address him, you may be a fool or rascal, whatever, but address him, hey sadhava, oh great sadhu, oh learned person. Now I am addressing you in such a wonderful way so that, you know, he may be a bit melt down, you know, he may be a little okay now, you know, he will be softened. Then you say, after flattering, you say,
sakalameva vihaya durat. Even though you are such a great learned person, now you have to do one thing for me. And that is, whatever you have learned, you please forget that. And after that, you surrender unto the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is the preaching technique given by Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur. Even though we cannot literally apply this technique, you know, if you go on book, you know, there will be, you know, falling at feet of many, many people, and, you know, some points we can take, you know, the position, the Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur is making the position of a humble, the position of humility that a preacher is taking in presenting Krishna consciousness. And sometimes, you know, glorifying, that is also very powerful, because then the people become receptive in accepting Krishna consciousness. So in this regard, regarding preaching in nectar devotion, in the introduction, Srila Prabhupada makes this point. He mentions, what is the solution if we don't want to be proud, or we have to present humbly? We cannot say, okay, I am humble, or, you know, I am not proud. That won't work. Prabhupada says one should think one is a humble servant of one spiritual master. And this knowledge does not belong to us. You know, we have got it from somewhere, from the spiritual source, and we are just giving it. So if one thinks like that, one can speak humbly. Or one can, you know, distribute books, or, you know, do other things in a humble manner. Otherwise, one can become easily proud. If you see Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the second verse, Srila Rupa Goswami, he mentions his humble position. He says, the second verse is actually a pranam to Srila Rupa Goswami's Ishtadev, his dear Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in that, Rupa Goswami mentions, I am writing the scriptures, this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, only under the inspiration of Lord Chaitanya. And my position is, even though I am so low born, I accept my humble obeisances unto the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he, even though he is a Goswami, he is one of the six Goswamis, he is from such an elevated Saraswat Brahmin family, still he is telling, I am such a low born. And he is presenting only as an inspiration given by Lord Chaitanya. So we can see how these great devotees like Rupa Goswami, they are also accepting such a humble position in presenting Krishna consciousness. And we have to understand, when Rupa Goswami says Varaka Rupopi, I am the low born, he is actually meaning that. It's not just, you know, for the, you know, the lip service. You know, just, you know, we say, okay, I am Prabhu, I am such a low, you know, such a fallen, you know, such this, then that. No, it's not like that. He is actually feeling that he is really low. And he needs the full mercy of Mahaprabhu to deliver this knowledge of bhakti. And in that mood, Sri Rupa Goswami presents Krishna consciousness. And next, coming to Prakashananda Saraswati and Mahaprabhu. Next verse, when Mahaprabhu was asked this question, that is, why are you like chanting and dancing just like sentimentalists? Why don't you study Vedanta just like other sannyasis? Which is the essential duty of our sannyasis, is to study Vedanta. And why are you not doing all these things? When Mahaprabhu was asked this question, Mahaprabhu replies. And the reply is also very, very humble. It's a very humble, the reply is very humble. However, the point is, when Mahaprabhu is replying in a very humble way, the points in the discussion, whatever points Mahaprabhu is making, it's actually smashing all the misconceptions and pride of Prakashananda Saraswati and all the so-called great sannyasis. So even though he's accepting a lower position, even though he's speaking with so much of humility, the points are so important and it is so shastric and it's so pure that it's actually smashing them. So smashing doesn't mean we have to, you know, we have to be a, you know, so much of energy, or we have to carry something in our hand and, you know, smash them physically. It's not required. So Mahaprabhu said, he said, my spiritual master said something to me. He instructed me. He said, Prabhu kahe shuna shripat ihara karan guru more murkha dekhi gorilla shasan. He said, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied to Prakashananda Saraswati, "My dear sir, kindly hear the reason. My spiritual master considered me a fool." That is Isharapuri. Mahaprabhu's spiritual master is Isharapuri. He considered him to be a fool and therefore he chastised me. He said, "Murkha tumi tamat nahika vedante adhikar Krishna mantra jabasad e mantra sar." That is, you are a fool, he said. You are not qualified to study Vedanta philosophy and therefore you must always chant the holy name of Krishna. This is the essence of all mantras or Vedic hymns. So this is the instruction given by Isharapuri to Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu is presenting this to these great sannyasis are all sitting and Mahaprabhu is presenting himself as a fool. He is not mentioning, "I am such a great person, I am in prema bhakti, so I am presenting this." No. Mahaprabhu said, "You know, I am a fool, so my spiritual master instructed that you are not qualified to learn Vedanta, so I am not learning Vedanta. Simply I am chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra." And Mahaprabhu further explained, Mahaprabhu said, "Whatever you are calling as Vedanta, it is actually misinterpretation given by Shankaracharya. It's not actually Vedanta philosophy. It's not really Vedanta philosophy. It is Charitika Bhashya or the misinterpretation given by Shankaracharya to delude, to confuse people. So that is the only purpose of whatever you are studying. Many people study for the sake of studying, but what they understand? Nothing. So what's the use of such kind of study of Vedanta? Rather chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And if we understand Mayavad philosophy, we all say, you know, we have heard this Mayavad term so many times. The essential element of Mayavad philosophy is that the Supreme Lord is made of, it's about Vishuddha Sattva, made of Vishuddha Sattva, but that Vishuddha Sattva, it is not our pure goodness as we understand, but that Vishuddha Sattva, they call it as made of ignorance. So the Lord is, Supreme Lord is made of ignorance. Same with the material world. So it's only the amount of ignorance that is different. Ultimately everyone is ignorant, and including the Supreme Lord. And it is transformation of the Brahman. So that is the whole point of Mayavad philosophy. We call Maya, Mayavad, because they say everything is Maya including the Supreme Lord. This Mayavad means, when we say Mayavad, everything, the Supreme Lord is also considered as Maya. That's the reason it is offensive philosophy. And Mahaprabhu said, in Mayavad philosophy, the energy and the energetic are non-differentiated. That is, ultimately there is only one. There is no difference between the energetic, that is the Supreme Lord, and whatever is produced from Him. For us, there is a distinction. We say Jiva is different, the Supreme Lord is different, but they say everything is one. So Mahaprabhu said, no, he quoted Parasya Shaktir Vividhaiva Shruyate. That is, the Supreme Lord has multipotencies, and through multipotencies, He actually manifests the whole cosmic creation. So when we say the Supreme Lord, Bhagavan, has six opulence, it's actually refuting the Mayavad philosophy. And when Mahaprabhu presented so many arguments in this direction, all the philosophers, all the sannyasis, they accepted. Because they changed the heart. So they could accept all whatever Mahaprabhu explained. And in this we had to understand the key point, that how this change of heart happened. One is, okay, the Lord wanted to give His mercy to these Mayavadis. That is one point. And on the other hand, the Lord engaged them in devotional service. So that is very important point. Because without engaging in a devotional service, we cannot actually change their heart. Because ultimately we cannot use a scrubber or a jiff to wash the unclean things in our heart. It has to be done by the Supreme Lord, by His mercy. And for that, one has to engage in some sort of devotional service. So even if you are preaching to Mayavadis, one has to understand that one should engage them in some devotional service. Some agyada sukriti has to happen. Devotional service performed unknowingly. That should happen. Otherwise, there is no possibility for them to receiving the mercy. And if that happens, eventually they can understand what we are speaking. But if you think only just presenting the arguments, Okay, if he says this argument, okay, I will refute in this way. If he present the other way, okay, I will refute in this way. That is good, but that's not enough. They should be engaged in service. Then the heart changes and the Lord becomes merciful. And actually they will be able to understand what we are speaking. The same way we can see, the same principle is up, we can see in the conversation between Mahaprabhu and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Because Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was such a great Mayavadi philosopher that all the sannyasis used to take guidance from him in Jagannath Puri. And when Mahaprabhu went to Jagannath Puri, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he thought, this is a young sannyasi and he can fall down at any moment because he is not fixed in the study of Vedanta philosophy. So I should teach him Vedanta philosophy. I should teach him Vedanta Sutra. So there also, when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya tried to teach Mahaprabhu the Vedanta philosophy, Mahaprabhu accepted it as a service, as a personal service, as a caring service. So that is the reason Mahaprabhu listened the whole Vedanta philosophy for 7 days without speaking a single word. And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya asked, why didn't you speak? He said, actually speaking, I didn't understand anything. Because whatever you spoke is just a misinterpretation by Shankaracharya. But I know actual Vedanta philosophy given by Sri Vyasadev. I can understand that, but not your misinterpretation. Then he gave the whole philosophy. He convinced Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya on the real meaning of Vedanta Sutra. So there also we had to understand how the Lord accepted a humble position and at the same time he engaged or allowed Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to engage in devotional service, and with that he received the mercy and all his misconception was changed. So here also the Lord, in this verse also, Lord is trying to explain, refute the arguments of the sages. The question is, who are you? In this regard, as mentioned in the purport, Madhvacharya mentions, actually the sages, the Kumaras, they shouldn't have asked such a question due to a simple, very simple reason. The very simple reason is that the Lord is present and Lord Brahma is present and the Kumaras are present. And when the Hamsa came, the Lord Brahma, he paid humble respects immediately. So the connection of Lord Brahma and the Kumaras is that he is the father, Lord Brahma is the father of this Kumaras as well as the spiritual master. So if the Lord and the spiritual master is paying obeisances unto the Supreme Lord, then the Kumaras should understand he is the Supreme Lord, because there is nobody actually superior to Lord Brahma in the material creation. In this universe, Brahma is the ultimate. And if he is paying obeisances to someone, that has to be the Supreme Lord. So without understanding the position of Hamsa as the Supreme Lord, these Kumaras ask this question, which is meaningless. That is, who are you? And with that, the Lord actually took this opportunity just by analyzing the question to give the transcendental knowledge. Actually speaking, he is not answering the question straight away, but just analyzing the meaningless of this question, the Lord could actually give a lot of spiritual knowledge, that is defying impersonalism and materialism. So I stop here. We see, is there any question or comments? Yes, Rose.
The four Kumaras,
yeah.
Did they get spiritual, did they get knowledge of bhakti by Hamsa Avatar's instruction, or when they went to Vaikuntha?
My understanding is that they got the devotional service when they went to Vaikuntha. Because the thing is, if otherwise, we cannot hear, if you see the verse from third canto, if you say, it is said, Sankshobhanam, the change in the heart, Sankshobhanam, Akshara Jushamavi Chittadhanu, that verse, you know, Tasya Aravinda Nanase Pada Aravinda, Kinjalpa Tulasi Mishra Makaranda Vayu, that verse, when they smelled the fragrance emanating from the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, which was mixed with the tulsi leaves, when it came to the ears, to the nose of Kumaras, and when it went inside the heart, when they breathed in, actually that caused a change of their heart. So if there has to be that change of heart, means, you know, from impersonal understanding, from Brahmavad to devotional service, they were not devotees at that time. So that change of heart happened when they smell that fragrance. So my understanding is that change of heart happened then. So this time, you know, they might be illusioned by other vimohit due to some reason, but it's not that they were not devotees before. They were, you know, the change of heart happened then. Yeah.
That's in this scenario, we don't know whether they are devotees or not devotees.
No, I don't know actually whether they were devotees or not devotees. Yeah.
But if they were devotees, they could identify who comes out of Tavas.
Could be, may or may not be, because you know, one can be affected by the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord also, even though they are devotees. Like Lord Brahma was affected, Lord Indra was affected. So we cannot exactly say they were not devotees at this point. Maybe we have to actually read and study to exactly point out. Then again, the two possibilities are there. Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.